Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's a cat over here, there's a cat over there, and the wrong one died, and the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. She was Victoria on the 6th U.S. national tour of Cats just before the pandemic. So welcome, Caitlin Bonna. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm excited to have you on. I know I have some Victoria theories, and so I always love to hear kind of the take there. But before we get to that, you started the show in 2019. But what was your experience with the show prior to that? Like, how many times have you seen Cats? Did you grow up with it?
So I was not one of the people that grew up with it. I know a lot of our cast members did. They all, like, you know, watched the VHS until they broke it. I was not that person. I saw a couple regional productions. I had a couple friends that actually, they both played Victoria in two different regional productions. So I had seen those when I was younger, but I actually didn't even see the movie until I got a call back for Victoria. And then I was like, maybe I should watch the movie.
Wow.
I grew up as a ballet dancer, so I had never really been super into theater. So like I had done like a couple musicals when I was younger, but it was mostly ballet. So I had just never really branched out and watched a ton of musicals or anything. Like if anything, I was watching ballet and that was it. So I had never really seen the video until I got my call back. And then I watched it. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. How did I never see this before? So I
do find Victoria always so interesting because it is usually a ballet background or a very heavy dance background versus most of the rest is theater or tumbler or singer. You know, it's like there is that kind of more musical theater, like extreme junkie growing up. Yeah. And your was more of like dance or ballet. So you saw some regional productions. You said you had friends. Was that like later in, like that wasn't young, was it? That was probably
Probably like
teenager.
Yeah, maybe like 13 to 15, somewhere around there. Yeah.
So. Okay. So it's still teenager, still early. At that age, did you recognize how sexual and over the top and some of that is at that age?
Oh no, I had no idea what was going on. Honestly, no clue. And I still didn't, even watching the recording, like being 19 years old, I still didn't really understand how sexual it was until we got into the rehearsal room and it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So then you get told the story basically, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've only seen a couple regional productions as a teenager. And then you get a call back, you're, you know, auditioning, get a call back and you say, okay, now I'm going to watch the 1998 movie. Still don't really kind of understand what's going on. And then you get, you land the job and you get into auditions.
Yeah. My audition process was a bit different than everyone else's. Cause I actually wasn't even planning on auditioning for Cats. I was in New York City. I was living in Pittsburgh at the time and I had been in New York City I got a call back for Phantom of the Opera. And I was like, oh, the audition for Cats is the next day. I should do that. Cause like, I knew it was a dancer show and I was like, oh, I would love to be Victoria. Cause I've had friends that did it. And I was like, you know, it's such like the white unitard and it's very balletic. I was like, I would love to do that. So I went to the open call with, you know, like 600 other people. I somehow got a vocal callback for a couple days later. Absolutely bombed it. Did terrible. My voice cracked like 10 times. I sang like 16 bars and she's like, is that all? I'm like, yep. And I was like, well, that was it. I'm done. I'm never going to hear back from them again. And then like a month and a half later, I got an email saying I had a callback for Victoria. And then I was like, oh, this is serious. And I didn't realize it, but they had pretty much cast the entire show at that point. Like I was one of the last people that they cast.
Wow.
Because they had a Cats boot camp situation that was like a week long. They all called it Cats camp. So like the entire cast knew each other because they were all at this Cats camp and pretty much everyone that was there ended up getting hired. But it was like a week long thing of learning all the choreography and learning different parts. And it was more so they kind of knew that they were going to hire everyone, just like placing people and figuring out like what parts they wanted people in. And I wasn't at that. And I had no idea. I was like, how does everyone know each other? But I was one of the only people that wasn't there. Me and I think like one or two other people were not at this. So my audition was a little bit different than that. And then I had my Victoria callback. And that was like 3 days long of just Victoria stuff and learning the entire. We learned a lot of the show and a lot of the choreography. So, my experience.
As kind of a ballet dancer, Victoria doesn't sing all that much, right? I mean, oh, just
thank God, no.
Okay. So I was curious, like, how that's like, is that like a major part of the audition? Because it feels like it's such a dancing role. And I mean, there's even rumors that because of how little Victoria sings and dances, that she's actually deaf. Is like one of the rumors.
That is one of the rumors. And apparently like white cats are a lot of times deaf. Like that is
really,
okay, yeah, we did research
on it. That makes sense.
Like we've read this whole thing. I think they could be, I think it's more common that they're blind too. I could be wrong about that, but we all looked that up because Chrissy Cartwright had said something about that. And because she doesn't sing all that much in the original, I believe Syllabub and Victoria were supposed to be one character, but they couldn't find someone that they liked their dancing enough to, and also their singing, like they couldn't find like a technical ballet dancer that could also sing up in, you know, super high octaves. So, I did sing. I sang through the whole show. I had a mic. I sang every single ensemble song. I didn't have any features. Actually, one feature I said like a snake in.
That's your
in
big,
one
big
of the
line.
McCavity reprises, I said like a snake, and that was my starring moment in the vocal. But yeah, so it is more common that white cats are deaf, so that is definitely one of the theories for that. But there was
interesting. I did not know that, and I didn't. The only blind rumor is the character that plays the actor that plays Gus in the 1998 movie was blind when he did it.
Oh, I didn't know
and
that.
So that was why if you watch the movie closely, they like walk him up. Like basically someone is holding his arm and they carry him up. Yeah. And he was a knighted, older, very famous British guy. Mm-hmm. And he was in his 90s, I think, when they did it. And so that was just kind of like so that's the only blind rumor I've got in the Cats universe at this point. But I didn't realize that came also from White Cats being there with it. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. So that is a common thing. But yeah, the singing was not definitely not the main part of my audition process. Like my callbacks were literally all dancing. The first round of callbacks we did, I think there were like 40 of us. We did a ton of dancing. Then they did a cut. Then we did another dance. And then they did another cut. And then I think we sang, but it was very, it was like 16 bars from The Addressing of Cats and that was all they had me sing.
Okay.
And then they did another cut and then there were I think 4 of us left and then we did like Victoria, we did the whole part. They brought in one of the dance captains from Broadway and we did all of the Victoria partnering scenes and then they did another cut and then there were 2 of us and we did like every single Victoria feature, all the partnering, we did the crazy like upside down lifts, we did a ton of lifts. Like Kim Craven, our associate, was like, you've done this lift before, right? I was like, yeah, totally. Never done it before. But you never say no in the audition room. It's always, yes, of course I've done it before. It was, the singing was very, very short. At my callback, it was also, they were looking for Demeter and a swing, I believe. So they also had, like they had us doing like 16 bars and then they had the Demeters like singing the entirety of McCavity. So,
yeah.
But yeah, no. And then I, a couple days later, came back for a final callback. I think it was maybe like 3 girls for Victoria and a couple people for Demeter. And Andy Blankenbuehler was there. We had scheduled, it was supposed to be like 10 to 6, the audition. It was like half hour long. We did the dances for Andy. We sang our songs and that was it. And it was a half hour long. And I got a call less than 24 hours later that I booked it.
Wow. Okay.
So it was, the singing was in there, but I think it was, especially for Victoria, it's definitely more about the dancing.
It was, yeah. It was
like they had to make sure that I could hold a tune and that I wasn't like tone deaf and that I could, you know, mix well enough with the ensemble, but it was not like the main part because I don't have any features.
Yeah. So. They have to make sure that when you're singing with the group, you're not going to throw it off, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the bar exactly. You're setting there.
Yeah.
So then you land the role, and this mm-hmm. is the beginning of the tour, right? So this yeah. is right when the tour is kicking off, and you miss Cats Camp. So
I missed Cats Camp.
But you're going into the, you know, the whole kind of rehearsals and everything leading up to the tour. Mm-hmm. So I always love to hear what was told about your character. Like, what was the story you were told about Victoria in that kind of lead up to the show? Like, what background are you given for her?
So we had an entire day where we sat with Chrissy Cartwright, who was one of our, I don't want to get her title wrong. I believe she was the assistant director, but that could be her wrong title. So, but she has done, she was like Gillian Lynn's like right-hand woman. Like she knows everything about Cats. Like this woman is Cats. Like she eats, breathes Cats. And she knows every possible storyline, like every little detail about every single one. So we had like, I think 6 hours where we sat in a circle in chairs and we talked just about the story of Cats and like all the different theories of everything. There was one theory, she said like everyone has, it can be this, it can be this, it can be this. So there was one theory that Victoria was Monkey Strap and Grisabella's daughter. And that's why she's the one that touches Grisabella at the end. But it was just kind of that she was like, Victoria's like the young, one of the youngest ones in things. She's one of the kittens. So she's like, Monkey Strap is very protective over her throughout the whole show. Like there's a lot of times where like I go to do something and Monk was like, absolutely not. And would like block me. And so it was a lot of people thinking that Monk is my dad. Hit the microphone. We also all got three different words to describe our cat. Like everyone was, mine were, I wrote them down. Mine were innocent, romantic, and unselfconscious. So those were, that was like the story I was given for Victoria. So she's like, you have to really embody these three words throughout the whole show. And like Victoria's whole thing is that she's, you know, discovering herself. She's kind of discovering her body. And during the ball, you know, as we discussed, the more sexual themes of it. She's, you know, having cat sex in the middle of the Jellicle ball. So
she's losing her virginity on stage. Yep,
sure is. Which I didn't know that's what was happening until we were in rehearsal. And yeah, there were some, I wasn't expecting so many words to be used and they were.
Yeah. It goes back to why I asked. I always start with when you see it first, because I saw it first as an adult. Mm-hmm. It still kind of was just like, oh, this is like, I was like, that's a lot. Like the ball's a lot, but it didn't really piece like, oh, it's just a giant orgy.
Yeah.
I was like, mm-hmm. oh, that dance is really sexual. Oh, I didn't realize that they're basically doing it on stage. Mm-hmm. Like it kind of like, it resonated me with this is like, and the McCavity song is extremely sexual. Just so many of them are very, very sexual. But as a kid, there were kids everywhere. And so I'm like, clearly it's going over everyone's head.
Oh yeah.
And now that I've researched the show and the background of the story, it's like, no, it is as sexual as it sounds. Mm-hmm. Like there is a lot happening with Demeter and McCavity, an abusive relationship, and Victoria having, you know, coming of age on stage with one of the other cats, like the ball
literal
being a nine minute orgy in the middle of the show.
Yep. And her solo is about her, you know, touching herself. Like that is the whole thing. That's like the shaking and everything. Like it's her discovering herself. And the word, I don't know if I can say this, but
you can.
Okay.
You're good.
The word orgasm was used probably like six during my audition, actually, not even like in the room. Like it was used obviously in the room, but that was used in my audition. She's like, and this is an orgasm and this is an orgasm. I'm like, oh gosh. Like I had no idea that's what it was about. And she was just explaining what was happening. I was like, oh, okay, got it.
Did you like think back to when you saw it the first time being like, oh my God, what did I watch?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I didn't, I had was very unaware that that's what was happening. But now that I know, now I can't unsee it. Like, that's all I see.
That's the part that I just still blows my mind, is that now that I've learned so much of this, and I've not watched it full through in a while, but yeah. It's like, I it's on tour now, and I like want to see it again and be like, oh, okay, wow, this is as aggressive as the story says.
Yeah.
I love that you were told that Grizz potentially was your mother, because I've heard from a few other Victorias that might not have been the way that they ever thought about that. And they've always thought it was potentially Demeter or somebody else. It does seem pretty assumed that Monkstrap is your dad.
Yes. And there had also been, it was kind of like there were a bunch of different ways it could have gone, because she had also said, like, Jenny Anydots pretty much was the mother of, like, all of the different kittens, and that she took care of them. And it's a lot of with cats, like, one is the mother, but then just takes care of all of the kittens, even in, like, normal, like, the animal.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like there was speculation. But yeah, I think the Grizabella theory is definitely could be accurate and would make sense for why Victoria was the one to touch her.
Yeah, that's what all the rumor mill stuff kind of centers around, is you're the first one to reach out.
Yeah.
And that would be potentially why. And it also could be a little bit of like the coming of age story by being abandoned by a mother and then having that like first experience. So that's kind of the other reasons. Did you get told about being deaf or mute in the, like, was that brought up, or was that just a rumor mill later?
I don't think she brought it up. Maybe it wasn't, it was definitely not something we talked about when we were doing that, like, big, not like a round table, but like the big discussion. I feel like she maybe had said something about it at one time, but I think it was something like we were just talking about at lunch one day, and everybody was like, oh, did you know that like white cats are normally deaf? I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's why I think in some productions Victoria doesn't sing at all. Like, she doesn't even have a microphone.
Yeah, there definitely are a few, and I always just assume that was just you didn't do the 16 bars in rehearsal, and they just really want the dancer, and so it's like, just, it's probably not super necessary if you've got the dancing. But yeah, I didn't know if there was any like rationale behind it. It seems like there's not a lot of rationale behind all of it besides staging. It does seem like there's definitely some staging that makes some sense. When you were doing your 6 hour, like, learning the story, what's the other thing that surprised you most? Like, when you were hearing the story?
Oh, there was a lot about Macavity and the going back and forth between that. Like, I think she had said that Grizabella had fallen in with Macavity, and then she like really lost her way. And like Demeter and Bomb had also, you know, been with Macavity, but they were able to get out. But Grizabella like just fell in too deep, and that's why she got exiled, basically, which I didn't know that. And there was a whole, like, obviously the Grizabella and Monk used to be together thing. And it's just like every single cat had their own like different storyline. And it was a lot of information to interpret in one day, because you're getting like all these crazy things. And like Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer, like their whole thing is that they were actually with Macavity too. Like, they were kind of assistants, but they weren't like in it super deep, and they were actually like really sweet, but they just were like kind of told by Macavity what to do, and we're thinking of like when they got older maybe they'd be like part of that. So it was, every different cat has their own unique storyline. So
I feel like I need to have the 6 hour session,
because
I've been slowly piecing this together by talking to different people, and I've gotten a lot of different variations. And it sounds like even the 6 hour session, though, there's some consistent truths, but then there's some stuff that differs from country to country, cast to cast, and everything in between. And that's what's kind of fascinating to me, is something that there's a lot of Broadway where it's just story is very clear, and it's played this way and sung this way, and there are no changes, and there's nothing. And Cats leaves a lot of interpretation.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why it's probably lasted so long, is that there's just so many different ways you can go every night and see a slightly different version, or someone's slight take. Or I think even Victoria danced, like the coming of age dance was with different characters in different ones. Because did you do it with, was yours with Plato?
Yes, or Alonzo? I did it with Plato.
Okay.
I think there are some productions that do Alonzo. And then there's also another name for Plato that I can't think of.
There's a lot of renames.
Admetus.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's his name is in the name of Cats. Like he.
Okay.
It's Admetus, but that is a character that was, I guess, ultimately the name was changed or the character was cut. Just kind of like Syllabub is also named Jemima in some productions. Like all of the cats have a million different names, and there's also an Electra. at some point.
I think Jemima got renamed intentionally.
Yeah.
I think Jemima got canceled. Mm-hmm. And so they moved to Syllabub.
Yeah.
When you were on and going on tour, mm-hmm. were you like any of your friends or family that were able to come see you? Was it anybody's first experience with cats?
It was everyone's first experience with cats.
No one had seen. So how do you prep them? Like, what did you tell them before the show? What did you say? Hey, here's what you're going to go see.
I said, I'm the one in the bright white unitard. And that's all I gave up.
That's it. Just come see me.
That's what I said. My amazing family, actually, they all, I think 8 of them, like a couple of my godmother and her husband and my godfather and his wife, my aunt, I call them my aunt and uncle, but just to clarify. Mm. So my godmother and my godfather and 2 of my aunts and my mom and my dad all drove up to Providence to come see opening night. And I think they were just so in awe of the fact that I was like the main dancer. They're like, you just turned 20 and you're doing like this Broadway. They had no idea what was happening.
Yeah.
Like, I think they were more just in shock by the fact, like, I told them I was like one of the main dancers, but they had no idea. Like, they're like, you're, I mean, I wasn't, but they're like, you're the star of the show. You're the only one we see, which I mean, is fair. When I'm in a white unitard, it's really easy.
Yeah, you do
to
stand
spot
out.
Me.
Yeah.
Especially
because stand out.
It was reflective.
And you get your own
too.
Time. Yeah. You get your own, like, you get a full moment really by yourself, which in cats isn't really that many cats that get that opportunity.
Yeah. Like, every cat has their own like little like feature, but I'm the only one that has like a dance solo that it's just me on the stage. Like, Mistopheles obviously has like his whole dance thing, but that's like a whole number. I'm the only one that had like a moment of just like silence. I'm the only one on stage. Like, that was, so that was really special. And I'm getting emotional thinking about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, I didn't really give them any warning. I just said, you know, I'm the one in white. It'll be easy to pick me out. And they were all just like in shock that this was my first professional dance job that I ever had. Like, this is my first job. So they were in shock that this was what I was doing. And most of them had never seen me dance like this. They had seen, you know, a couple like ballet shows, but they had never seen me do anything like this. And they were all like, oh my God. So yeah, it was less so about the story for them and more about the, oh my God, my niece is the star of this show in their heads. So
yeah. I mean, that's a really cool experience. I do think, like, I find it fascinating because I was not given any prep for what I was going to see. And I now kind of always think about what would I tell somebody going to watch it for the first time. But it's different for you. It's like, yeah, just come see me. Here's here's my part. Yeah. Forget the rest. Forget the other, you know, whatever hours. But I'm here. And you do, like, since you're on stage a lot, because, you know, a lot of the cats kind of dance through a lot of stuff, you are very easy to pick out because of the white.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I do want to talk a little bit about you were in the group that was on tour when the pandemic kind of just abruptly stopped it. And so I've talked to a few other cast members, and I think what I found really interesting is just, I knew you were actually, I was very likely going to come see you in April. Like, it was on tour in where I'm from, Indiana, and it was on its way, but it just, like, I don't even think you knew when you started the performance at night that that was going to be the last one. And so I'm really just curious, like, when did you get that news? Like, how did that whole thing, like, such an abrupt ending happen?
So we had a break, like a 5-minute break, and we all opened our phones and found out that Broadway closed. Mm. So we were literally sitting in the rehearsal being like, oh my gosh, Broadway shut down. Like, it is.
Yeah.
And we were asking our PSM, we're like, are we done? Like, are we closed? Like, is this rehearsal going to be it? Like, is this the last time we're ever going to be on stage? He's like, we're not closed. Like, don't worry. We're still doing the show. And like every like 20 minutes, we're like, are we still good? We're still open. Yeah. We're still planning on doing this tonight. Cause every other show had closed down. I believe there may have been one other tour, but every show was done. We were, I think, the only, there may have been one other tour that was still going on, but I think we were the only show that performed that night. So we didn't know it would be like our last show, but we were like getting emails all day and everything was constantly changing. We had like gotten an email saying, oh, you're going to go to South Carolina and you're going to sit there for 2 weeks while this all cools down. And then we're going to start up again. And then it was like, we're skipping Montreal because we can't be in Canada right now. And we just like had gotten like rapid fire, like 15 different emails saying like, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. So nobody really knew what was going on at that point. We just got ready and went on stage and did our show. And I remember it was like in the middle of ball, there's a part where like after the whole like main part of ball, like Copeland and like everything, the whole like main part of ball happened and we were going into another section and there's like, everyone has little moments that they have on stage. And I was crawling to the back and I like had my little moment with people and I like look and like our entire crew, I'm going to get emotional thinking about it, but like our whole crew and our stage managers and like everyone and our company managers were all like standing in the wing watching. And they had never like, every once in a while someone would like come and watch, but it was like our whole crew were like standing in the wings. And I remember seeing that and being like, oh, this is the end. Like, we're done. Like, this is our last show.
Yeah.
And we kind of like all at that same time, like we all kind of had a moment where we looked around and noticed that like the local crew and like our crew and our stage managers and company managers and like everyone was standing in the wings watching. And we're like, oh, like this could very well be our last show. And like, we were kind of, you know, before the show joking about it, being like, oh, well, one last time, we got to do it. We got to have a good show because this is going to be our last one. Like trying to make light of the situation, being like, we're going to be back in 2 weeks, obviously. Like there is no way this is going to be our last show, but like, let's make it good just in case. But like, and we were really joking about it because we're like, that was our way of dealing because we're like, no, it's not going to be our last show. But kind of seeing that during the ball, we all were like, oh, this is the end. Like this is, yeah. And I remember our wardrobe supervisor, Mikey, who I absolutely adore. He used to watch it every night. So like, it was not unusual that he was there. He always stood in the stage right, like back wing and always watched. And I used to like make eyes with him, like off stage and like joke around with him. And like, I had a part where I had to kick and I used to try to like kick my hand with my foot to like, we just had like little things that I did like off stage. And he was sitting there like kneeling and like crying. And like everyone else was sitting back there watching and I was just like, oh man, this is the end. So that was, it was a tough one. After the ball, I think we all just kind of like went off stage and just kind of cried. like I used to like crawl off stage and then go like put my legs on the wall because my legs were so exhausted after doing ball.
Yeah.
And I did that and then I sat up and I was like, that's the last time I'm ever going to do that.
Yeah, it's got to be a lot to take in, especially with, again, which it being so abrupt and not really knowing and the uncertainty. Because I was in Indiana, which is where I'm from, and I'd went to a basketball game. And then there was the same thing. There was the basketball, like March Madness tournaments were starting and they played one game and we're all like, are they going to keep playing? And it was like one game got to about halftime and they realized they probably shouldn't keep doing it.
Yeah,
it was the same kind of thing where it was just like, this is. We're not sure, but all of a sudden it just very abruptly stopped.
Yeah.
And just knowing that that was the end and then y'all are now on two different things. Cause it's like, it didn't come back. Like there wasn't that 2 week later and come back. It was the end. So
yeah,
hopefully there's another opportunity for you though, if you want to ever be Victoria again, cause it's still, you know, it's a show that's never going to end. It seems like
Cats never dies.
We'll be back after this short break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Let's change gears to a couple rapid fires, and then we're going to talk about the million-dollar question.
Okay.
Okay, so if you were not Victoria and you could play one other cat in the show, doesn't matter, like if you could sing it, do it, dance it, male, female, mm-hmm. anything, just who would you want to do for one night?
Mephistopheles.
Mm-hmm. Different dance
immediate
number?
Answer. Okay. Sorry, what?
It's a different dance number?
Yeah, I mean, our Misto and I, we used to like mess around and we would, if we ever had like a rehearsal studio, we would do like the turns together and like mess, because he was a lefty and I was a righty. So we used to do them like opposite. And there was, I don't know if I can say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I saw on Instagram that one night on Broadway, the Misto had like hurt himself and couldn't do the turns. So Victoria jumped in and did the turns.
Oh, wow.
And this was like a bootleg that someone posted on Instagram and our Misto sent it to me. I'm like, man, if you're ever hurt, I got you. Yeah. Like I can jump in. I know it. Like every time at our sound check, whenever we did Misto, like I would do like the dance, like we would all do it because it's just so fun. So I would love to do Misto. I would love to have that dance number, the super high energy. I mean, it's completely opposite from my entire character, because everything I did was very slow and lyrical and like everything I did was like on a like a flute yeah. and some piano, and everything Misto did was on drums. And I used to say this all the time, because you could tell like what was original choreography versus what was Andy Blankenbuehler mm-hmm. choreography, because everything that Gillian Lynn did was on like the piano or a flute or like anything, and everything Andy, like the newer stuff that Andy did, everything was on like a drum beat, like a sharp, like more not aggressive but like more of a sharp movement, and then Gillian was more of like a flowy, so you could go into like a really pretty like arabesque or whatever and then like snap it out to add like the Andy flair to it.
Interesting.
That was yeah.
Okay,
so I feel like almost the entire Misto number was completely brand new, like he revamped it completely. Obviously there were the iconic turns in Misto that will never change, but the entire Misto number was really Andy's, like I feel like that was his like favorite number to do, because it was very like everything was on a drum beat, everything was sharp and precise and like very like hip hoppy and just like very Andy Blankenbuehler style. And like everything that Victoria does was like, I think most of my choreography was original Gillian Lynn, like lyrical, slower, mm-hmm. like longer extended movements. So it would be so fun to do like the complete opposite of that and do like full Andy Blankenbuehler choreography.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that number was one of the only ones that was nothing Gillian Lynn. It was just like all Andy.
Interesting. So I'm not knowledgeable enough about any of this stuff to have noticed of that, or to really even be able to tell you the difference between the two, mm-hmm. having seen the original or the 1998 mm-hmm. and then saw Broadway twice. But yeah, I would have never picked that up, but that's really interesting to hear. And I love the, like, yeah. you're ready for, you know, you're not rooting for injury, but it's like, hey, if there is an injury, no, I'm ready. Yeah.
I'm like, in. If it happens, we had a plan because he would normally go to this side. And I was like, you go to this side and you call me up and I'll do
yeah.
it. But yeah, I feel like the choreography, it was the entire show was a very cool mixture of like a Gillian step and Andy step, a Gillian step and Andy step. Like it was still like had the original, like the iconic original choreography that was like needed to make it Cats. But still, like, everything had a newer, modern flair that, like, Andy did. And it was just, like, it was really cool to realize. And I think that we actually had the drummer in rehearsals with us. And I think that was the reason, because mm-hmm. all of the newer stuff was meant to be on, like, a drum beat rather than on the piano. So we had a rehearsal pianist and we also had a drummer, which I feel like is not super common for like shows. I feel like it's usually just like a rehearsal pianist and that's what it is. But when we were learning the show, we had a drummer too. And that's how learned it.
Very interesting. Yeah.
So it's a really cool mixture of the
yeah.
two.
Who would you say are your favorite and least favorite cat characters? Not actors, characters.
Ooh. Oh God, don't, not the actors.
Yeah, that's why I have to always clarify that question.
Okay, so my favorite, obviously Victoria. I love Gus.
Gus, okay.
Gus is my favorite. We'll get to him later because he's obviously going to be my choice. But
I was going to say, anybody non-Grisabella, I'm like, anytime someone says that Gus is their favorite, I'm like, okay, this is going to lend well for my last question.
Yep. I really love McCavity. I know he's like the bad one, but man, was like the McCavity fight with Monkey Strap was one of... That was also like full Andy, because that was not that was like a newer thing that was added. Like it was a completely different fight than the mm-hmm. original. That was one of the coolest parts of the show for me, because like the lighting, like it was like dun and it was like bright red. Oh my God, it was so cool. Like watching that in rehearsal the first time, like they're literally like climbing up set pieces and like throwing each other across the stage. Like, I just think McCavity's kind of a badass. Yeah. So like, of course, everyone's always loves the bad boys, but I'm like, and it was, you know, my partner, of course, too, because it was Plato turns into McCavity. And that has no significance. Yeah. It's just like, they make Plato not an obsolete character, but they make him like so that you don't notice it when he like kind of disappears.
There's a handful of
like
those.
He has his feature. Yeah. Like he has his features, but it was also like his little minions. They make them two ensemble members so that they can just kind of like slip out and then come back.
Yeah.
Without being like too noticeable. Like obviously if you take the girl in the bright white leotard off stage and put her in something else, you're probably going to notice.
Yeah. There's a couple you can, but then there's also like, I think Gus is also Buster Jones. And so there's a couple.
Buster also,
it's Peter.
First character's name. I know Peter, but I feel like it was a Peter something.
Oh, I don't know if there's a full name. It's just marked as Peter in the,
I could be wrong.
That's my.
Oh no, I'm thinking Tugger because Tugger was also Bill Bailey.
Yes, Tugger's Bill Bailey.
That's the two. You're right. It's just Peter.
Yeah, that's my. That's my least favorite cat.
Peter Buster. Peter.
Yes, I dislike Peter. I just think you got all these amazing names and you got Peter, and it really bugs me that they just chose Peter.
I like Bill Bailey. I wish that was like one of the characters because we say it
say Peter too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is why they renamed it.
Could you imagine having a cat named Peter?
That's the thing. Although I do find I have a few friends that have like very traditional like human names for their, but all for dogs.
I love that.
And it's usually
I love that.
I do. It's kind of entertaining.
But it's like, come here, Stanley.
I have a friend that has a dog, a golden retriever named Mark.
I love golden retrievers.
And so I grew up with golden retrievers, and
I did too.
Having one named Mark just every time they post it on social media, I laugh.
Mark. I feel like there's some human names that work for animals and then some that it's like, that's weird.
Yeah. That's Peter. That's Peter for me.
I love that. Peter, they could have been more creative, but again, they wanted it so that it's not a super noticeable cat so that he can slip out and become someone else.
Yeah, I get it. Like,
because Grizabella's in the opening
baby
number
Grizz.
Too. Baby Grizz.
I would have.
Yeah, she doesn't have a fancy name.
I would not have known that Peter existed by name if it wasn't for the fact that it's in all the rumor mill stuff. Like it pops up in the Cats Wikipedia when I was researching.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was just like they could have named him anything. They could have called it Cat Five, and I would have been fine. You know, like just Dancer Number Two.
It's in the program too.
I know.
It's like Peter / and I'm like, I feel like Peter was not a necessary thing.
Exactly.
He's in the opening number for like 30 seconds. He sings one line and he's in the opening number for like,
the
5 minutes.
That person does two more like legitimate, bigger characters. Mm-hmm. It's like, they don't need
that. Peter's
listed in there.
And everyone's like, who's Peter? Yeah. And then it's like Bill Bailey. He's like, who's Bill Bailey?
Exactly. That's why Peter's my least favorite. But I'm not letting you off the hook. Who's your least favorite cat?
I don't know if I have a least favorite. I'm trying to think. I have my list of all the cats here. Hold on. Let me go through them. You know who else I love? Hold on. I have a lot of favorite cats. I also love the twins, Corcopat and Tantamile.
The twins are wild.
They are so cool. And I was also like, we had like 4 different iterations of twins. I feel like we had a lot of turnover because our original girl ended up actually booking the West Side Story movie. So then one of our swings took over Tantamile, who was also my cover. And then she left, and then another girl took over Tantamile, and then our original Corcopat took over Mistopheles, and then we had a new Corcopat come in. So we had like a lot of iterations of twins, and I feel like I was just like really good friends with all of them. Like some of my favorite people were like the twins. Like I'm still, Laura and Melody are like 2 of my best friends. Like I adore them. They were both our later Tantamiles. So like I literally just saw Melody last night. So like it was, I feel like it was special because I just had so many moments with both of them. And I just like, they do so many cool things when you watch them. Like they have so much depth, but like, again, they're like, their costumes are kind of like not super like bold. Like they're kind of just, they blend in, but if you really watch them, they do like the coolest things. And I also just like had so many fun moments on stage, like playing with them because we were always doing like if you watch every dance, I think in especially Tugger, I'm literally opposite of Tantamile in every single thing. Like we are doing the exact same choreography on opposite sides of the stage. almost, for, I think, for like four different numbers, we're opposite completely, like the entire
the
time.
The twins, as a casual spectator, I just don't think most people pick up. Like it, and then you learn about them, and I've talked to Melody and a couple of the other twins over time. It's like, I want to watch.
And I listened to Laura's the other day too.
The twins, because like they like turn before somebody comes on stage, and they do like, there's a lot of staging and like unique things, them being like telepathic, that I think is so clever and cool.
Yeah.
That almost gets like, I think it was Laura who said that, like, if you, you know, if you don't know them, you, you know, you might not notice it, but if you do and you watch it, you're really in for a treat and you just get this like really special experience. So I'm with you on those. They're one of the ones that I still like the next time I watch the show, like fully through, it's like what I want to try to pick up. It's like, I do want to see, what are they doing? Cause that's a part that I totally missed the first time I saw it.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. I could be wrong. I think a lot of the stuff they do was like newer, like Andy choreography. Like I think a lot of it was added cause Andy really likes like the smaller movements, and there are just things like they even like the way that they move their head is very like small but noticeable because it's Andy and that's like what he's known for, and I like some of that I believe was in the original, but I think they just did so much more, like they just have so much more depth in this production. And yeah, if you watch them, they do so many, I mean, there were like, I was watching like our reference video and I was like, there's stuff that I didn't even know that they did, and I'm on stage with them, and like they're always the first ones, like in the second act, they're the first ones to come out. They're during the ball, they're the first ones to wake up. They like, they start like, they said to always feel like your ears are moving, even though we couldn't move our ears. Oh, that would have been really cool if we could have wigs where our ears could move. But they were always the first ones to like notice things and like notice when something was wrong. Like even before like a couple of the McCavity scares, you can kind of see them starting to like notice that something's wrong before the music changes, before there's a crash, before anything. So they're really cool. I really liked their part. I'm trying to figure out if I have any that aren't my favorite.
Okay. I'll give you, you've gone through enough of the positives that I think we'll go off. Let's switch to favorite song in the show. Okay.
I have two. So Tugger and Skimbleshanks. Skimbleshanks I loved because I added so much to Skimbleshanks, and just like, I added a lot of like cat-like things. Like he did something where he'd be like a speck of dust, and I would like spaz, and like I did so much like cat-like stuff in it, and we weren't told to do that. I just did it. No one ever told me not to. So I just like, And that was, I think that's why I liked that number so much, was because it wasn't really choreographed. They're like, just be cats. And like in the entire beginning, I did a thing where I would follow Skimbleshanks, like he was walking, and I would like follow him on my knees and like do exactly what he was doing, but like smaller and like on the floor and like kind of making fun of him. And like no one ever told me not to do it. So I was like, this is great. Like I used to just, we had so much fun with that number. And then like as it went on and like new cast came, like everyone found something fun that they could do. And like that was just, it was just such a fun number. Like it was the highest number to sing. Like that, everyone sings the same line and it is so high. So like thank God there's not a ton of crazy dancing in it, because it's like trying to belt those notes out while you're like running around doing leaps across the stage would not be easy. So thank God it was like, it was just more of a fun, like a theatery kind of number. So I always had fun with Skimbleshanks because it was like where I could just really
That was your cat moment, like your true cat moment. Cat.
So my kitten moment, even, because I was like, this is where Victoria's like youthful side came out, because we just, you know, saw her have cat sex in the Jellicle Ball, and now she gets to like play around with a speck of imaginary dust and make fun of all the older
the
cats,
fun youth moment versus the what we talked about earlier. And then Tugger, great song.
I love Tugger. That was another one that was, very, very different from the original. Like that was one of the other numbers that I feel like had the most, Andy stuff in it. And it was just such a fun number. Like there was like, I did so many lifts. I mean, you probably don't even notice it half the time because you're watching Tugger, because you know, he literally steals the spotlight as he's supposed to. But I did probably like seven or eight lifts in that thing. And I also like slide between people's legs and were like jump splits. And like, it was just such a fun number, like super high energy, like very sassy. Like, I feel like that was the one time that I got to be like, like actually like rocking it out, because every other scene, like Victoria has to be very like graceful and elegant and poised. And Tugger, because we were all kind of like under, not like a McCavity under his influence, but we were all kind of like, oh my gosh, we love him. Yeah. Like, please pick me. Like, it was, so that was like the one time that I got to be like a little sassy and like a little like sexier and like kind of have that
that's fun
vibe. So I really liked that number. And there was like, and there was also like, I feel like it was the number that stuff would go wrong in the most often. So there was always like, I think one of our guys, I don't know if it was an understudy that was on, I'm not sure, but like one of his like boot things broke off. And so I had to do like a jump straddle and I like grabbed it, did a head roll and then like chucked it off stage. And it was just like, and all of the guys behind me were like, that was so smooth. Like there was just like, there was always something that happened in that number that we had to like work out. So I feel like there was just always something
that's
to keep
fun.
It like entertaining. And Mickey always made different choices, like, and our understudies made different choices too. So like, it's kind of the same with Gus. Like he did it differently every night. So
yeah, it seems like Tugger, it's just like always fresh encouraged. And exciting. Like that number is really supposed to be that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never knew what he was going to do. He was kind of,
yeah,
like obviously he kept the things that he needed to consistent, but like when he went out into the audience, like there was
exactly,
it was, you never knew, you never knew. Because one time he like dumped an entire bag of popcorn on himself. Like it was just always, there was always something entertaining. It. So it's just, it kept it fresh.
I love it.
So that was, I loved Tugger. It was always,
so now is the million dollar question. So. And I'm excited because you've already teased that you're going to go away from this. But yeah, I mean, so it sounds like we're going to go Team Gus answer. Here. But I would love to hear a little bit about your rationale of why Team Gus over Grizabella.
Which I feel a little bad about because I feel like I'm the one that should be like, yeah, Grizabella, yeah. Because I touch her. But like, she's not that old. She has plenty of time to go to the Heaviside Lair. She, like, my thought is that she just got accepted back into the tribe and she doesn't even get to enjoy that because now we're sending her up to die. Like,
I completely
give her a year.
Completely agree. That's been my most recent, as I've talked to more people about this, I'm like, if you want to accept her back, let her spend time with the family. Let her be reunited with her daughter. Go back and spend the year and have some
suspected daughter.
Yeah, potentially, depending on when you see it.
Yeah.
Okay. So and then you're picking Gus. What is your criteria for Old Deuteronomy selections? Like obviously I think Gus is definitely the most deserving, but what is like goes into that decision? Is it most deserving? Is it longest life? Like what do you think Old Deuteronomy is choosing off of?
Well, I think I feel like Old Deuteronomy. I don't know. Like, I don't know what his criteria is, actually. I guess I've never thought about that. Like, we're doing, like, all the nominations and, like, you know, I mean, I feel like I feel like it should be the oldest cat. Like, I feel like you should send the one.
But then that's Old Deuteronomy, right? Isn't that him?
I feel like Gus is older than Old Deuteronomy. I don't know, though. That's my other thing. Like, does Old Deuteronomy ever get to go to the Heaviside Lair?
I've asked that question a lot of times.
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't.
The reason I wonder it is because it seems very clear that Monkus Trapp is next in line. And that, like, he's, yeah. Wants to be the next leader of the tribe.
He's trying really hard.
And try, yeah. Like, you see it. Yeah. And it's like, well, if he's trying really hard, that means there has to be an end date for Old Dude. Like, he's either retiring or he's killing himself one time. Or, like, how does that work?
Like, and yeah, because he's the one that picks. So is 1 year he just like, yeah, it's me this year. All right, bye.
Yeah.
Like, I've thought about that. And like, what, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. I don't know if he ever, I don't know if he ever like gets to go. I don't know if maybe he's magical. Like they all are, like all the cats are kind of, everyone has something. Like, I don't know if he's just like eternal. I don't know if one day he's just going to disappear and we assume that he goes up to the Heaviside Lair. Also, like, why does it only happen once a year?
Well,
cats are only allowed to die once a year.
Does it explicitly say once a year?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like so I tell everyone, like, if you need to know the plot of Cats, there's one moment where you get the plot. And if you miss it, you're probably not going to get it. Like, it's right after my solo. It's called Invitation to the Jellicle Ball. And it's like, I can't even remember the exact words because it's been so long since I did the show, but it's like, Jellicle cats meet once a year at the Jellicle Ball where they all rejoice, and the Jellicle leader will soon appear where he makes what's known as the Jellicle choice. Like, that's
your whole plot.
Basically, there's four lines, I think. That was like the first two, and then there's like two more lines, and that's the whole plot.
Yeah.
And if you're not paying attention and you miss that, and a lot of people weren't paying attention because people will come in late, and that was when they were allowed to come in because they didn't let them come in during my solo, thank God, because that would be super distracting, just like bright lights coming through. But no, they would wait until after my solo, and then the invitation was when they let the late people come in. So I feel like a lot of people miss that plot all the time because there were always people coming in the audience. So yeah.
Okay. So it is annual. And
is once a year.
Once a year. Okay.
I guess if it's more than once a year, it makes it less special, but
I mean, it's an orgy. So like they only have their orgy once a year.
Of course. Yeah. Twice a year is too much.
Yeah. We can't have that. Yep. Was it 9 minutes, 10 minutes? What's the dance number?
12
minutes. There you go.
12 minutes. The 12 minute cardio work. Oh, I shouldn't have said that.
It is. I mean, it is.
It is cardio workout. Like, especially for me, I didn't realize until I was swung out one time. I was like standing backstage watching and I was like, people go off stage during the ball. Like, I didn't know. I thought everyone was on stage the whole time. And all these people would come off and like drink water and like take a couple seconds. I'm like, y'all get to go off stage? Yeah. Like, I didn't get to go off stage at all. I was dancing the entire 13 minutes. I had one rest moment that Andy actually cut me out of. He came into the rehearsal and I was so upset because he was like, yeah, you're not going to do this part. You're going to be on the ladder. I was like, okay. And I was so upset that he cut me out of it. And like, thank God he did, because that was the only, I got like 15 seconds to breathe and rest. And that was it. That was like the only time. And like myself and like Laura, and we had like talked about it. We're like, could you imagine if we had to do that part too? Like there would have been no time to breathe.
Yeah.
So it was, it's a long, it's a cardio heavy 12 minute long nonstop number.
Yeah. Okay. So it is annual once a year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Your kind of argument is either oldest or just really not even most deserving.
I think they should be deserving. Like if they're a jerk, I don't.
So McCavity's not going.
McCavity is not going. I mean, maybe he could turn himself around, but I mean, all the girls would probably vote for him.
Yeah. That's why I asked the criteria question, because the criteria question really dictates who you pick.
Yeah, I feel I've never thought about that. I've just always thought that, like, what if Gus doesn't make it till the next year? Like, what if Gus dies before the Jellicle choice? Like, does he still get to go to the Heaviside Lair, or does he just get reborn? Like, is he just not reborn? What happens if someone dies during the year? You know,
that's the other anti-Gus argument, is that he might not have another life. Like this, he might be on his last one. That is from,
that's so sad. I never thought of that.
From the mouth of a Gus, who performed Gus on Broadway, is the one who said that. That was, I personally believe that was that person's way to accept not being selected each night. But that was the rationale, is that if he gets picked, he might not ever have a chance to come back to the tribe. But I don't.
That's so sad. I never thought of that.
I don't know if I buy that. I think that's just a way to make him feel better about not being picked every night.
Yeah. Like, because cats are supposed to have 9 lives. But I don't know in this show if they have 9 lives or if they're just reborn. Like, it doesn't say they're reborn 9 times and then they're done.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm
trying to like figure out what my criteria is. And I feel like it has to be deserving and also like old enough that they might not make it to the next one. Like, I feel like Jenny and Skimble, like they'll get their day, but it's not yet. Like they're younger. They're like the parents, but like Gus is like the grandfather.
Yeah. So you're looking at generations. And so your generation is Gus, Grisabella, old Deuteronomy, and Nate.
I don't think Grisabella is in that.
Oh, okay. So she falls in the,
I mean, if I'm her daughter, and I'm one of the youngest ones, and she was with Monk, then she's probably the same age as the other
ones. So you've got Gus on his own layer here. And then you've got Grisabella, mm-hmm. Skimble, Jenny, Monk, McCavity, probably, right? Like, that's probably the next bunch. Yeah. Although Monk and Tugger are supposed to be the same age, so maybe Monk's younger.
Yeah. I guess Tugger, too, but he's definitely not deserving.
Yeah. Well, it depends on your criteria.
I mean, he worked on himself, but... Also, I forgot. I think Syllabub, there was also theory that she could be Grisabella's daughter. Yeah, and that's why she
there
sings.
That is a theory as well, for sure.
And it's possible that both of us could be her daughters.
I have tried.
Well, which would make sense because we were supposed to be one character.
I've tried to figure out the family tree, and there's just too many dotted lines.
I think we made a family tree.
There's too many.
I feel like we did.
Okay. Well, if you ever find it, I would love to see it.
I'll have to see.
I've got a few people have sent me examples. Some fans have sent me some examples, and I have attempted, but there's too many, like, it could be A or B. Like, there's just too many choices, and depending on how you do that, it doesn't actually naturally line up to a tree. There's also, like, a lot of little side branches of maybe yes or no, or... could be mom, could be dad. So I think it's...
Do you ever talk about the collar thing?
Collar thing is an interesting theory because there's, 5 cats with collars?
No, I think most of the cats have collars. There's only
five or six that had them.
There's only a couple that
they have owners.
And it's like Tumble Brutus, Plato doesn't have one, and maybe Alonzo doesn't have one.
I thought it was.
I know Plato and Tumble Brutus do not have collars. And Plato, there was a whole thing because it's like, well, maybe Monk's trying to protect Victoria because he doesn't want her with a stray.
The other one that's really interesting. So there are a lot of these like mini rumors that go around too. So the collars is one. There's a lot of fan fiction for Tugger and Mistopheles, the other.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
There's one other.
I love those. Those are my favorite. Yeah,
there's some like novels, like books written out there.
Oh, we've read some of them.
Yeah. The one
we used to do that. That was our entertainment. Yeah.
The one that I am still trying to figure out is on the fan Wikipedia page, there is every cat's astrology sign. And I really want to know who put that out there. And I don't know.
Who figured that out?
Exactly. And I don't know enough about astrology to like know whether any of these are right or wrong.
Okay, now I got to look. Do you know what Victoria's is?
I can pull it up pretty quickly because I've got it open here. Let's see. We are going to find this.
If she's a Virgo, I'll believe it because that's what I am. Oh, she's a Cancer.
Cancer. Yeah. Okay. So are you knowledge about this? Are you ready to have this conversation?
No, not at all. No, I know nothing, absolutely nothing about any of it.
I don't either. And that's why when I saw that as like, this is part of the show, like this is part of the theories, I was like, what is going on here? And who posted all these?
Yeah.
Like who came up with
these
ideas?
I mean, who
ideas?
Was like, yeah, I don't know. There are some diehard Cats fans out there. There's a lot of diehard Cats fans.
I have talked to a handful of them and it is very fun because they know all the stuff that I don't. As someone who I definitely have enjoyed the show and enjoyed seeing it. Everyone assumes just because of this that I'm a super fan. And the reality is I know the plot of this really well and I don't know much else. And so there are a lot of things where I'm like, I didn't even know about the twins when I started recording these shows. Like I couldn't have told you a single thing about them. And then now I know a little bit about them. But I have enjoyed learning about it and it's fascinating. And it is like this weird kind of almost like mini, it's like its own Jellicle cult in itself, like its own tribe.
Oh, it's a cult. Like, absolutely.
And that's fun. Cause it's given a lot of people a lot of like really, unique things. Cause there's almost a cat for everybody. Like there is a character that most people can relate to, which is cool.
Yeah. And I always loved when people dressed up.
It's great that people do it. There's been a lot I've seen. We did a live recording pre-pandemic for the show and we had somebody come in full Mistopheles, which was awesome.
I love that.
I have somebody, there's an Etsy store that that mailed me a tail, an actual tail for the show. So I've got my own tail ready to go if I ever do cats for Halloween one year. It's wonderful. And I love that I get to have another person argue against Grisabelle with me. So thank you for bringing Gus, team Gus here.
Gus, go ahead.
Well, sorry. I was just gonna say, how can we, my last question is just how can we keep up with you on social media and stay in touch?
Oh, I wasn't done talking about Gus yet. Gus. I had more
Gus.
I had more Gus. I was just gonna say that was one of my favorite parts of the show every night was listening to Gus. And I actually got one of my notes that I got we were doing like previews or maybe just tech or something from Kim Craven was she's like, I love like your acting in Gus, like you're looking like you look super invested, like you're like acting really well. I'm like, oh, that's not acting, like I am super invested. Like I love listening to it. Like she was just like, oh yeah, the acting's great. I'm like, nope, no acting here. Like and he like always made different choices every night. And like, we had like little moments in Gus, like he used to say, like he'd say something about Victoria and like, I would stand up and he'd be like, sit down, this is my moment. Like we had all of our little things. And I just like, I mean, how can it not make you cry? You know, like he's talking about like his glory days and like he was in on the theater and it's just so sad, but like, it's like happy because he still kind of gets to relive that with like the peaks and the pellicles a little bit, but it's just, I like the poor guy. He's tried so many years to be the Jellicle choice and someone beats him out every year. And this year it's someone who isn't even old enough she finally gets accepted. And then it's like, all right, bye-bye.
I love it.
We're going to push you off the spaceship here. And
eventually I'm going to record enough of these that Gus is going to just change the show for me one time, just one
probably.
Night.
Honestly,
just one night. It doesn't even be regional theater or some like little small town. Yeah. That's what I want.
Like, I feel like the show could end with us accepting Grisabella. I feel like we don't need to see her go up and die.
What, for sure? Or my other idea for the tour is let a different person die each night. If you're at a like if you're there for four nights, five nights, have a different ending each night. Doesn't mean that they don't come back. Like you still do the same show, just put
and
a
just
different
not tell
person
anyone
to go up in the heavyside layer each night.
I love that. It's like we accept Grisabella and then it's like, all right,
yeah,
Gus,
you got
you're
picked
up.
And you're going up, and then Gus went on Tuesday, so on Wednesday somebody else goes up.
And one day Dude just goes up there by himself.
Exactly.
And nobody tells anybody who it's going to be every night. The cast doesn't know. It's just some.
Well, the other thing is my real first idea was you just audience vote. Like, let's make it like true interactive.
Like an interactive.
America's Got Talent.
Interactive Cats the
Musical.
Yeah,
you know, American Idol style. Like, you got your buttons by your set. It's like, who deserves to go tonight? And then they do it. And then that's the cat that gets on to go up.
Yeah.
I have all these great ideas. Nobody listens to me.
Honestly, I feel like that would be great.
Nobody has taken me up on them.
Honestly, I'd do it. I think that's a great idea. Interactive Cats the Musical. That's
one day.
Solid.
One day it's coming.
I mean, it is interactive. We literally went into the audience like 15 times.
Oh, yeah. You start the show scaring children with green eyes. So I think that we can end the show with a buzzer.
One time someone scared
me. Someone scared you.
When it was my neighbor, in Philadelphia. I had like 300 people come see me total in Philadelphia. Like I have like the world's best support system. Like I had my entire group of middle school teachers came to see me one night. Like 30 of my teachers from middle school came. They're just wonderful. And I had one night where it was like the neighbor's night. So like we live on like a cul-de-sac in New Jersey, and like everyone from the cul-de-sac came to see me, and I was crawling out. And I flashed my eyes, and I didn't know that's where my neighbors were sitting. He's like, "Hi, Caitlin!" Scared the crap out of me. Like, fully said that. And I, like, could not stop laughing. And it, like, he did it right before I flashed my eyes. And I was like, it scared me. And I will never forget that. I loved that. It was so funny. I literally, like, came off stage. I came off, like, cracking up. And everyone's like, "What's wrong?" I'm like, I just got scared.
That's amazing.
It was so good.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I never forget that. That was a great show. I also just loved Philly. I mean, I had people in we were there for 2 weeks, and I had somebody in every single performance. And like my parents also bought front row tickets.
Right
they
there
were sitting
in front of you. Yeah.
Front row center. Mm-hmm. I did all of Naming of Cats to them, and I did the Jellicle Ball, and I finished, and I have to I do that big lift at the end, and then I run and slide and finish like literally on center. I was looking right at my dad, and my dad was crying because he cries every time he watches me dance. And then I started crying because my whole family was sitting there like crying, and I'm like, well, of course now I'm going to cry. So that was a fun.
That's
one.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Well, this has been amazing. I do. How can we stay in touch on social media, and how can everyone keep up with you and everything you're doing?
Okay. So my Instagram and my TikTok are the same. They're both Caitlin Bond 5. I post a lot of cats content on my TikTok. I'm not going to lie. I did a lot more like in the beginning of the pandemic, but there's still a lot of cats content on there. So I talk about like behind the scenes stuff and like things that happened and like the crazy experiences and all the things.
Amazing.
So definitely follow me on there for more.
Absolutely. Yeah. Follow and, you know, keep posting more so people can continue to hear the, you know, all the fun stuff with the show. This has been amazing. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This is great. Thanks. I'm always going to root for Gus. Gus is my guy, man. Team Gus.
Love it.
Forever. Grisabella can get it next year.
Cats too.
Give her a year to be back in the tribe. Give her a year to like be back with her family, and then she can die. But like, give her a year at least, not like 5 seconds.
Exactly. Well, thank you. And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the cat catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical, Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Suffs has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.